The youthful no-makeup look was the ideal, yet women used makeup to achieve it. Now, did they use stuff that was safe for yourself? No, but that's okay. They made themselves look good.
That's all that mattered at the time, okay? Do you got the look down? Can you slay it?
Yes, queen. Who cares if this has arsenic in it?
Yeah, beauty is pain and death sometimes, okay?
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to, or if this is your first time listening, welcome to Allied Rebels. We are your hosts. I'm Dee.
And I'm Roxy.
Woo!
Hey. I like that. You're pumped up.
Because I'm super excited about what we're going to talk about today.
Oh, so what are we talking about today?
We're talking about eyeshadow. The history of eyeshadow.
Ooh.
You know I love to dabble in makeup, and so do you.
Mm-hmm.
But first, before we move on to that form of artistry, let's talk about us. What's new with you, Roxy?
Yeah, so I've been playing Resident Evil 3, the original, which you and I had to play together too.
Of course.
And so my boyfriend started playing it, and it's really fun to have him experience this because it's like one of our favorite games. And so I'm just happy he's getting to play it. And he did say he wishes that he would have played this first before the remakes.
Uh-huh.
Same thing with Resident Evil 2. So that's cool. But yeah, it's really cool. Just that nostalgia is amazing. Love those polygons. So great. It still makes me scared. Like my palms still get sweaty when I play it.
Yeah.
I'm constantly having to stop. And then Jill like just starts standing there with her hand on her hip, like waiting, tapping her gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, on her side, like, okay, let's go. I have someone literally chasing me, so let's
go. You're fine. He's not going to show up here. I know.
It's fine. Yeah, so it's fine. You're Jill. You can take him.
Right?
But anyway, yeah, it's so great. So I can't wait for us to play it together, too, and we can talk about it and stuff.
Reliving that, literally every time I spent the night for, like, I think 3 years, we played it every time.
Yeah, we, like, would literally, like... You know, towards the end, it was kind of like we were just speed running it because we knew where everything was, even though it changes a lot. Mm-hmm. We just kind of knew like, oh, if it's not here, it's over here. It was just so fun because we could like do it in about 3 hours, I think. Mm-hmm. So
we were speed runners before we knew that was a thing.
Yeah, actually, seriously. So I also watched The Wedding Singer because I know that was one of the movies we had talked about that I was going to watch because I know I watched it with you, but I literally like did not remember anything about it. I figured I'd like it because it's Adam Sandler and I like Drew Barrymore too. I did like it, but I feel like I didn't like it as much as I thought I would. I you know what it was? It was like, it was one of those, it's so overhyped. Everybody loves this movie. Everybody. Like, I literally don't know anybody that talks bad about this movie. So I was like, oh, and like, you know, in hindsight, like, yeah, it was cool because like it had a lot of cool like 80s music. Yeah. But one of the things we were talking about when we were watching it was like Drew Barrymore's character dresses very like 90s. So she was just very like
ahead of the
cutting
time.
Edge. Yeah, that was awesome. So but anyway, it was still cool.
Yeah. Julia Goulia.
Yeah, Julia Goulia. Hi, my name is Julia Goulia. Same, dude. and then started playing Hogwarts Legacy. I know we haven't I know you're gonna talk about it too, but yeah, we haven't played it that much. We've only gotten through like the beginning part, basically the intro. We got to Hogwarts and we're just in our dormitories, but yeah, it's just beautiful. I just love the animation. I will say one of the things which you might touch up on or not, but I was expecting more customization of the characters. I don't think it's too limited, but I thought there'd be more because it felt like that's what they were telling us we were going to get, like super customization, but that's okay. It's not the end of the world.
Right.
Anyway, I know they'll touch up a little bit more on this stuff, but what's been new with you?
So doing D&D, you know, still running my campaigns. And then I was kind of at a block of not knowing what to do with a couple of the characters that are playing. And so I was like, I really don't know what to do. I can't remember anything about them or whatever. And then I finally remembered. I was like, oh, yeah. And then I got really excited again. So I was starting to feel a little down about D&D. And then I found my passion again. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But Hogwarts Legacy. Oh, my God, guys. Okay, so the customization. It's limited. Very limited at first. You can't really ever fix how your character looks. But the most you can do is, like, the character I picked for myself. She was the girl that had the scar on her eyebrow.
Mm.
I took the scar off. Mm-hmm. And I changed her eye color. Ooh. And you can change the hair color and stuff later. And you can, when you go to Hogsmeade, there's a hairstylist.
Yes.
But have you gotten your wand yet?
No, not yet. We literally just finished the intro and then we landed in the dormitory. So we haven't gotten far yet.
What'd you get sorted into?
Of course, it's Ravenclaw.
Okay, good. Did you connect your account? Okay, perfect.
I did, yes.
Okay. So when you go get your wand, apparently you can change what your wand looks like. And I missed that. So I have the very plain looking wand at first. And you can't go back and change it later.
But
you get like handles for your wand that you can change. So at least I can change that.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Good to know.
And then I'm not giving any spoilers away to the actual gameplay, but you do quests and stuff and you can get different styles of robes. You can get different styles of clothing underneath your robe. You can make it look like you're not wearing the stuff that you get. Like there's an option change look or something like that, that you can click. And so yes, it's customizable. But also not too customizable.
Right. And I think it works for this, about the story. But like, to me, it's like, I want to live like this is me literally going to Hogwarts.
Yes.
When I was reading the books and stuff. So, but it's still cool. Because I will say my character, it is me. She's named after me. I made her look as much as possible. Same. As me. So it's literally me I'm playing. But I'm glad to know about the, you can't fix the customization like the way you look, because I did end up making 3 different characters. I basically have played the intro twice because the first time I played it, I wasn't happy with my character. So then I scrapped her. I made another one. I still wasn't happy, but I didn't play with that one like all the way.
Yeah.
And then I remade it. I'm like, okay, I'm happy with this one. So I'm glad to know that, because I was wondering if maybe you could in the future change it, which that makes sense.
Yeah.
I could see like hair color, style and stuff you can change. But yeah.
There's no makeup that you can do. I'm like,
speaking of makeup, come on.
Right. So yeah, it's just there's stuff that I absolutely love about the game. And then there's that little stuff like that's like my biggest gripe about it. So I guess it's not that bad of a gripe.
No. Yeah. Make it enough.
Yeah. Oh, I will say there's a couple of things that you'll do later that will really glitch out. But as long as you like leave the area and you start a new quest, usually it fixes itself.
Okay. That's nice. Good to go. I mean, we are playing on different consoles. Yeah. You're playing on the PS5 and I'm playing on the PC. So I know we got a patch because I know there's been issues
with PC. I had a patch too. So.
Yeah. Okay. It'll be fine. It's fine.
So that's a little news about what we've been doing. We're going to move on to our news segment. Roxy, what games can we look forward to?
All right, so there are a couple of games that I thought were super interesting. The first one is called The Wreck. It's coming out on the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, which I'm kind of surprised we're still making games for these, the Switch, and PC. And it's coming out March 14th. A little bit about the game. It's a mature 3D visual novel about sisterhood, motherhood, grief, and survival. Follow failed screenwriter Junin as she attempts to make it through the most pivotal day in her life. Relive the past, alter the present, and embrace the future, or without your help, Junin's story might end in a wreck. So this one looked interesting. The animation was very interesting. It was kind of minimal, but I kind of really like it because the character, she's, dare I say, my age, mid-30s, and it's kind of like she's going through a midlife crisis type thing, and so it just sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I when I was watching it, I was like, do I like this kind of game. And I was like, well, I do. I like it a lot. It looks really cool. And I just like that it is about a person going through basically the stages of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really want to play it.
Yeah, I agree. It looks very different. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. And then we have Resident Evil 4, the remake, coming out on PlayStation 5, the Xbox Series XS, PlayStation 4, and the PC. This one's coming out March 24th. I know. We're going to vent about it in a second. Survival is just the beginning. 6 years have passed since the biological disaster in Raccoon City. Leon S. Kennedy, one of the survivors, tracks the president's kidnapped daughter to a secluded European village, where there is something terribly wrong with the locals. So, I know, you're not super excited.
Okay, in a way I am, because I want to see if they actually do make the effort to connect it to the original 2-3 Code Veronica. And, like, if they actually do make that effort, I will consider Resident Evil 4 a Resident Evil game. Until then, it's just a survival horror game with the Resident Evil character in it.
Hey, you know what? I know where you're coming from. I get it. Especially because it's a little disrespectful that they totally skipped over Code Veronica.
Yeah.
And that's like one of your favorites. And I like it. It's just that you played it way more than I have.
Yeah, I did.
So you're more attached to it. But even I think it's fucking disrespectful. So yeah. It is. but anyway, I am really excited because, like you said, I want to see the connection. I already have seen different things. And we'll talk about that another time. But... you know, I love my boy Leon, and Ashley just already looks fucking terrific. The improvement, yeah, it's just, I like it. So, like the vibe of it. So I'm just excited for this remake. And then we have Dredge, and this one's coming out on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, the Switch, and the PC on March 30th. Dredge is a single-player fishing adventure with a sinister undercurrent. Sell your catch, upgrade your boat, and dredge the depths. Ha, this is the title. Dredge the thing. Dredge the depths for long buried secrets. Explore a mysterious archipelago and discover why some things are best left forgotten. This is another one that, like, the trailer looks really good. It looks like a very kind of almost relaxing type of game. I want to know about the sinister undercurrent part of it.
I want to watch somebody else play it because there are things in the ocean I don't want to see. So, you know,
I think that's totally fair.
Yeah. It does look really good. I'm not going to it looks super fun. And like you said, kind of relaxing, but yeah, I want to know what sinister undercurrent it is.
Well, Dee, what about the movies? What's going on with the movies?
Apparently, March is movie month, okay, guys? Because there are a ton of movies coming out. The first one that I'm talking about, though, is Creed 3. And it is rated PG-13, coming out on March 3rd. Still dominating the boxing world, Adonis Creed is thriving in his career and family life. When Damian, a childhood friend and former boxing prodigy, resurfaces after serving time in prison, he's eager to prove that he deserves his shot in the ring. The face-off between former friends is more than just a fight to settle the score. Adonis must put his future on the line to battle Damian, a fighter who has nothing to lose. The trailer for this looks so fucking good. I'm like, I don't usually love these type of boxing movies, but I don't know, there's something about the Creed series that is intriguing.
Yeah, I've never seen any of the Creed movies, but I am familiar with like the Rocky movies, and the trailer for this one, yeah, it looks like interesting, like hypes you up.
Mm-hmm. So sure does. I don't know, I'm looking forward to it.
That's awesome.
The next movie is called Champions. It is rated PG-13, coming out on March 10th. Involves a stubborn minor league basketball coach who is forced to coach a Special Olympics team when he is sentenced to community service. You need to go see the trailer for this because it is fucking hilarious. Like, when I was watching it, I was trying not to laugh loud. So I was sitting here going, and then Roxy was watching it and she was going, But she had her headphones on, so I don't know if she realized how loud she was laughing.
My bad.
No, I thought it was funny, so I knew exactly what trailer you were watching.
I mean, come on, it's Woody Harrelson. Like, how can he not, like, have a good time? It just looks really great.
Yeah, I just, it was funny. I can't wait to see it.
Same.
And then we have Scream 6 coming out March 10th. Couldn't find the rating for it. I'm assuming it's going to be...
Probably R.
R or PG-13,
I guess.
Don't know. But it's about the four survivors of Ghostface murders leave Woodsboro behind for a fresh start in New York City. However, they soon find themselves in a fight for their lives when a new killer embarks on a bloody rampage.
Mm-hmm. This looks so good.
Yeah. I wasn't like too thrilled about seeing 5. I was like, yeah, okay, I'll see it eventually. But after seeing the trailer for this, I want to watch 5 and then go see this.
Yes. I know we talked about it last year when 5 came out, and I wasn't always the biggest Scream fan, but I did like that reboot. And then this one, it just looks really great. Mm-hmm. I'm super stoked and excited to see like what happens. So yeah, I do want to see it.
And then Shazam! Fury of the Gods is coming out March 17th. It's rated PG-13. Bestowed with the power of the gods, Billy Batson and his fellow foster kids are still learning how to juggle teenage life with their superhero alter egos. When a vengeful trio of ancient gods arrive on Earth in search of the magic stolen from them long ago, Shazam and his allies get thrust into a battle for their superpowers, their lives, and the fate of the world.
Oh my gosh.
Dude.
So good.
Okay, you know I'm not a DC person.
Yeah.
And I didn't know too much about Shazam to begin with, but the Shazam movie that came out a few years ago, I loved. So this one, I can't wait for.
It's a must watch.
Yes.
It was so fun. I went in like watching a Shazam. Literally just watched it for the first time a couple months ago. I was like, okay, yeah, I don't know, we'll see. Oh my god, I freaking loved it. I found out like this one was coming out, I'm like, oh, because I was literally, when the movie was over, I was like, why haven't they done a sequel of this? Like, and my wife was like, oh, they are. I was like, ah! So it's just, it looks so great. I can't wait. It looks so good.
Oh gosh, why can't I think of his name?
Zachary Levi? No, is it? It is Zachary Levi.
Oh, you remembered correctly.
Yeah. Anyway.
But I love Zachary Levi because he was on an episode of Try Not to Laugh with Smosh.
Mm-hmm.
And he was fucking hilarious on there. So you need to watch the Zachary Levi episode of Smosh.
Okay. Yeah. No, yeah. He is really funny. So.
And what was his show? Was that Chuck? Yeah. Chuck was hilarious.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet, but he is really funny.
Yeah, he is. And he doesn't hurt that he's real good looking. Anyway. The next one, John Wick Chapter 4, coming out on March 24th. It is not rated as to what I could find, but I'm assuming it's going to be rated R. John Wick takes on his most lethal adversary yet in the upcoming fourth installment of the series. With the price on his head ever increasing, Wick takes his fight against the High Table Global as he seeks out the most powerful players in the underworld, from New York to Paris to Osaka to Berlin. So basically, there's going to be a lot of fighting again. Yay.
I really actually want to see the John Wick movies, so I've never seen any of them. I do like these type of movies, and I like my boy Keanu Reeves. So I need to get on the Chapter 1, 2, and 3 before this one.
They're good action movies. I don't know. I just like reading about John Wick more than I like watching the movies, I guess.
That's okay. To each their own.
Anyway. The last is Dungeons & Dragons Honors Among Thieves, coming out on March 31st. It is rated PG-13. A charming thief and a band of unlikely adventurers embark on an epic quest to retrieve a long-lost relic. But their charming adventure goes dangerously awry when they run afoul of the wrong people. So, Chris Pine is the charming thief. And boy howdy. That man plays in a lot of nerd things, doesn't he? He's in Star Trek. I guess that's not a lot. That's nerd enough for me. He's in Star Trek and D&D now. He just needs to admit he's a huge nerd.
Yeah, he might be.
I know.
Right? But yeah, no, this movie looks really fun. It has Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And I'm just excited to see it. It looks really fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
On to the topic at hand. We're going to start with a nice little quote. You are not born glamorous. Glamour is created. Max Factor.
Ooh, I like it. We is fancy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, eyeshadow is a type of cosmetic which is applied to the eyelid and the skin below the eyebrow to accentuate your eyes. There are a number of eyeshadows available in the market in different shades, textures, and brands. It's been worn by both women and men for centuries. So now we're going to get into the history part of eyeshadow. The history of eyeshadow goes back to ancient Egypt and Greece. For example, Egyptian culture, both male and females, used to encircle the eye area with a dark dye called kohl to make their eyes more of an almond shape. They also used to apply the powder eyeshadow, sometimes with the help of a stick.
Just like what we do now. We also use different kinds of, well, brushes, I guess.
Right.
Fluffy sticks.
Yeah, we don't just... Not that they did that either, but you know.
That might have worked. The red adds a little bit of a, you know, a little pop of color there.
Yeah.
So kohl is considered to be the first eyeshadow used. Many people still think that kohl was just crushed charcoal, but they are dead wrong, okay? It was made using many ingredients like crushed antimony, which is a lustrous gray metalloid, gorgina, beautiful, oxidized copper, lead, problematic.
Just a little. It's just going around your eyes. You're fine.
You're fine. Burnt almonds. Malachite, which is a really nice green copper carbonate mineral.
So pretty.
Very pretty. Ash and chrysocolla, which is a hydrated copper mineral. A lot of copper. Mm-hmm. And back to the lead, I just, that's very, very problematic. But it's okay.
It's fine.
It's a different time. So Egyptians believe that kohl is really useful for the vision of their eyes as well. If you compare the modern and the ancient Egyptian eyeshadows, they both have almost similar application and use. In ancient Greece, the colored eyeshadows were used for decorative purposes. At that time, it was used mainly by upper-class people. They made it by using different herbs, crushed stones, minerals, and dried flowers. Because that makes everything pretty.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I realized we forgot to mention was one of the first colors that they really used besides the kohl was lapis lazuli. That blue stone?
Yeah.
They would grind it into a powder and they would use it. They would add oils or something to it to bind together to use it as eyeshadow as well.
Ooh, beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So the earliest evidence of a commercial product called eyeshadow dates back to the 1910s in the U.S., which we'll talk more about that later. Cosmetic company founder Elizabeth Arden visited a beauty salon in Paris in 1912. Studying products and techniques, in 1914, she introduced eyeshadow to her own salons in the U.S. U.S. eyeshadow was advertised as Arden Eyeshadow in the newspaper as part of Arden Venetian Preparations range of cosmetics in 1919. The product was sold in 1922 as Eyeshadow. By the 1930s, eyeshadow had become a common name used by Elizabeth Arden Inc. and other cosmetic companies such as Helena Rubinstein's Incorporated and Max Factor.
Yeah, I never heard of the Helena Rubinstein one, but I remember Max Factor from, I feel like I haven't heard that name since the 90s, to be honest.
Right?
I'm sure they're still around. I just haven't heard it. So the latest evolution in the eyeshadow world is the mineral eyeshadow. Some women complained of irritation and allergies, after the application of eyeshadow. Thus, mineral eyeshadow was developed at the dawn of the 21st century. But no, just kidding. Like, that is... your eyeballs are super precious. So yeah, you should take care of them.
Yeah, just
stop,
a little.
Stop putting lead on them and stop sticking sticks into your eyes, people.
But it makes such a nice red color, like you said.
It's true. It's true. So Mineral eyeshadow aims to resolve these issues, and because it does not contain any organic chemicals, the chances of eye irritation are pretty low. The sales of mineral eyeshadow clearly show that women love this product. However, it should be noted that not all mineral eyeshadows have the absence of organic chemicals, so check those labels, people.
Seriously, because there's a lot of places that will put mineral eyeshadow on their packaging, and it's...
That's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's still technically mineral eyeshadows, as long as it's a certain amount of...
There's always like those little loopholes, like, like if it's a certain percentage above, like, or, you know,
exactly.
I can call it that. Mm-mm.
So eyeshadow and the applications of eyeshadow have gone through many different phases. We are going to go through from the 1900s to now. For example, in the 1900s, the ideal face of the Edwardian era was that of a porcelain doll with a pale white face, flushed cheeks, small red lips, and arched eyebrows. The youthful no-makeup look was the ideal, yet women used makeup to achieve it. Now, did they use stuff that was safe for yourself? No, but that's okay. They made themselves look good.
That's all that mattered at the time, okay? Do you got the look down? Can you slay it?
Yes, queen. Who cares if this has arsenic in it?
Yeah, beauty is pain and death sometimes, okay?
That's why the beauty die young.
Ugh.
But powder was used to absorb oils, reducing the shine on the nose and the forehead, which we still do to this day. Coloring eyebrows opened up pretty eyes, and applying rouge to your cheeks and the lips gave you a healthy looking glow. Yes. Between the 1900s and 1910s, makeup may have still been a taboo subject, but most women did something to enhance their personal beauty, like staining their lips, their cheeks, and powdering their skin on a daily basis. So it wasn't frowned upon, but it also wasn't expected at the time yet. You know what I mean?
Yes. I mean, it was simple, I will say. It was a simple look. So it was pretty easy to achieve.
Yeah, I guess they didn't throw in the contour and all that other stuff on top of it. And
Not until a century later.
Most makeup of the 1900s focused on, as we said before, the lips, the cheeks, and the face. The term makeup still only belonged to the domain of stage actresses. A woman could not be seen wearing anything other than a natural face. That being said, the main component of any Edwardian lady's bag was rouge, which came in pots of varying sizes and could be applied on the cheeks, forehead, and the lips, as opposed to lip shaping. Like on the stage, you know, they did like the heart on the lips.
Mm-hmm.
That was lip shaping. They used roses a lot. They would like boil down roses and add oils to that little pot. And so they would literally just use it on their lips. They would use it on their cheeks. Sometimes it would be their eyeshadow. They would use it for everything.
I kind of like that. It's a one and done type thing. So it's kind of cool. Because I kind of done that before in the past. Right? I've had like a lip color and I dotted some of my eyelids, my cheeks, and my lips. So, hey.
And you can build it up in intensity on where you're putting it.
So it looks a little different. Yeah, I like it. I kind of like that.
Yeah, they're thrifty.
Mm-hmm.
Eyeshadow, as we know it this day, was not invented yet. However, many women would use crushed cloves or burnt corks to rub along their lower lid. Theater women used colored crayons in the shades of brown, black, chestnut, blonde, and blues to deepen the eye line. I was watching this woman on TikTok. Her name is Erin Parsons, I believe. She does a ton of history makeup stuff. And I watched her literally do the almond thing. And I watched her do the burnt cork thing. Because I was like, how would that work? And then she showed. It was like, holy shit. That looks really cool, too. Would I do it now? No. But like.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
People are super smart and ingenious. It's all for the looks.
Heck yeah.
So moving on to 1910s, which when we're talking about this, the 1900s and 1910s really kind of meshed together. There wasn't a big separation between the two. But by the 1910s, there was a turning point in cosmetic use for women. So to put it in context, Max Factor opened his first Los Angeles studio in 1909 and began immediately to create an impact by creating early screen siren looks for Hollywood actresses. The impact this had on women around the world was as immense as the impact of cinema itself. It was a decade that saw the first mascara introduced by a certain T.L. Williams, who named it after his sister, Mabel. Maybe it's Maybelline. the brand Maybelline takes its name from her. Apparently, she used to formulate her own mascara using hot beads of colored wax, which impressed her brother so much that he created the first commercially available version of it to the world. That's pretty amazing. And to put in perspective too, the reason like we're bringing up all these other looks is because eyeshadow still wasn't super prominent in the 1900s and the 1910s. They're mainly focused on the lips and, you know, just making sure you were pale and maybe a little bit of color in your cheek here and there. But it wasn't a big thing just yet until like right now we start with the mascara. And then, you know, you go on from there, which I will say mascara is one of my faves. So,
yeah.
So, surprisingly, blue eyeliner was used as a daytime look. Who would have thought?
Right?
Mm-hmm. Here I am with my blue eyeshadow right now. Hell yeah. So, smudged black and brown eyeshadow became an anytime look because of Hollywood, which is kind of cool. And again, Max Factor was the first in the U.S. to create a vampy eyeshadow look using henna extract, leaving the eyes stained for multiple days. Which, you know what? I wouldn't mind that because I'm kind of a fan, unpopular opinion maybe, but I'm kind of a fan of that like eyeliner look that looks like you've had it for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. So, you know, that'd be cool too for like eyeshadow. Mm-hmm. And his inspiration was from Turkish women's makeup techniques. So, yeah, it's really cool to learn a bunch of different things from around the world.
Mm-hmm. Like the way we put on makeup here in the US is totally different than the way they put on makeup in Japan or even in Europe or, you know, Africa.
No, yeah. And like, for example, when we're talking about the 1900s with the lip stain and stuff, that's a big thing in Japan. That's where I learned it from. I really like doing the lip staining and you just stain the little center of it and it just looks so cute.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. So, the 1920s woman was the first to truly create an artificial face. Startling eyes, scarlet lips, and a pale pallor. Thanks to buckets of powder resembling that of a corpse. Oh, dear God. The consumer boom in makeup simplified women's requirements and a handbag carried all any daring flappers needed. Cake mascara was applied with a brush and the ever-present push-up tube lipstick. And guys, this cake mascara was disgusting.
You were telling me about it. Oh my gosh.
They literally would either spit on the cake or spit on the little brush and just brush it through onto their eyelashes.
Oh, that's so sanitary.
Oh, and the first fake eyelashes, you put them on with spirit gum, but the band that held it together was fish bladder.
Why? But why? Anything else? But why this?
Oh, yeah. Another thing I learned from Erin Parson. Like, yeah, it's crazy.
Oh my gosh. No, thank you. Not time traveling to 1920s. I'll tell you that.
I was going to say, there's a reason I was born now.
Yeah, same.
Smoky eyes became ever more popular due to the silver screen. Coal eye shadow is for the most daring girls. So it was popular to do it, but not popular enough for everyone to do it. Still a little taboo.
I feel like it was for like the goth girls of that era.
Yeah, the flapper girls.
Basically, yeah.
Bright blue eyeshadow became very trendy. Again, that was kind of more of a daytime look. So that's interesting.
Very interesting.
Maybelline became more popular because they started introducing more products such as eyeshadow. A rainbow of colors began being produced, not just the browns and blacks that we were seeing, but some of the stuff that they used to mix up the colors were a little harmful for the eyes, just saying. And so, like, reds are very hard to create even now to this day, and so are purples, but I'm sure it was even harder back then.
Mm-hmm.
Grease paints were becoming popular for eyeshadows, which I don't know if you've ever used grease paint for your eyes.
No.
That is hard to work with. because you have to use the grease paint and then you have to powder it down. Yeah, it's just really hard to work with. So I was like, grease paint? Why would you choose that?
Because it's fun.
I like a challenge.
Exactly.
So in the 1920s, they had eyeshadow and eyeliner combinations that would go well with your eyes, quote unquote. So for blue eyes, they suggested green or blue eyeshadows and brown mascara and eyeliner, which, interesting. Green eyes was gray or green eyeshadow with brown mascara and eyeliner. Interesting again, interesting choice. I don't see how that would make your eye color pop, but okay.
I know, right?
Brown eyes was a brown and plum eyeshadow with black mascara and eyeliner. I'm like, okay, that's good.
Yes. The plum would definitely work for this.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And then black eyes, which, you know a lot of people with black eyes?
No.
Yeah.
So the demons.
Yeah. even if you think you have black eyes, they're brown.
Yeah, exactly.
So, unless I love you, but I don't want to meet you.
Yeah. Basically, PSA, yeah, black eyes are not a thing unless you're a demon. Just saying.
The black eyes have a very faint red that can be applied. I'm just saying.
But how come only the black eyes get the red, huh?
Because they're mean.
You gotta accentuate the soullessness in the eyes, so, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and back then, eyeshadow was applied with a finger and only tight to the lash line.
Yeah, almost like an eyeliner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so by the 1930s, the gradual emancipation of women through the 1920s brought with it an independence of action. Got it. What? And there is no bolder way to express your femininity than with makeup. Without a doubt.
Sorry.
Yeah, I love that. I'm just jealous because I can't snap worth crap. So.
Oh, here, I'll snap for you.
Without a doubt, the art of women's makeup took off in strides during the 1930s with the help of Hollywood glamour, of course, and the new rage of full-color fashion magazines. Gone were the heavy kohl eyes, and in came pencil-thin eyebrows and alluring pinks and shimmers. Mascara was now a necessity in a makeup kit, and the fashionable application techniques concentrated on the upper eyelashes, leaving the lower untouched. I don't know how I feel about this. Not good. I do not like that.
That is a hard pass.
Yeah, very. Eyeliner was traced from the tear duct with an upturned triangle effect. Eyeshadows became more pear-shaped with sweeping lines outwards to enlarge the eye. So I like this. And you know what? I feel like everything comes and goes. It comes mm-hmm. and goes. And we've seen that already. Like blue was in, then it was out. And, you know.
Coming back.
Mm-hmm. So cream eyeshadow was introduced as well around this time, and lighter shades began to become more popular, leaving the vampy look in the past. Which, you know, I love that look. I like the dark, but I like everything. That's,
all right.
That's a problem. I like everything. Yeah.
That is the problem for me too.
Glossy eyes were achieved by dipping the tip of a finger in Vaseline and adding eyeshadow, or adding it on top of the eyeshadow look, which was pretty interesting. I do know, like, Vaseline has a ton of uses. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. That's cool. Around this time, too, eyeshadow was usually saved for evening looks. But, you know.
They were getting a little more bold with their looks. So I could see why it would be saved more for evening.
Yeah, that's true. Gotta spice it up.
In the 1940s, while there is a popular retro pinup look, much stylized by the likes of Dita Von Teese, it's not an accurate description of the 1940s look. Simplicity and convenience was the key for many women, as many women took to working in factories and on farms. Redder lips became more popular, and in fact, lipstick was considered in the US as an essential for the war effort. To keep morale up.
Yeah.
You know, we gotta look good for the men.
Of course.
Fuck you. It's for me. Sorry.
No, you're not sorry.
If they did do any eyeshadows, it was light medium brown with beige highlighting.
Okay. Ooh, mm-hmm. We're starting to get fancy here.
Yes. They still didn't quite blend their makeup yet, but that's okay.
What is blending?
Right. However, mascara was used, and eyebrows were defined with Vaseline.
We're getting our eyebrows on fleek.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, absolutely, I agree that mascara is an essential.
Mm-hmm. And I never thought eyebrows were essential until you did my eyebrows that one time. And I was like, oh my God.
They seriously change your face. Mm-hmm. 100%. It's wild. It's super cool, though, to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on to the 1950s. It was a glamorous decade. Creams, foundations, and shadows were the in thing. It was the era of the mask effect. A thick, creamy application of foundation was used, and flesh-colored powders were used to set it. Eyebrows still had a natural look, but were more tapered and feminine. Rouges were less emphasized than in the 1940s, and if there was a color to define the 1950s, it has to be pink.
Woo!
Mm-hmm. Pink hues were used in shadows and reddish-pink lipsticks. The eyeshadows were used subtly on the eyelid, and it was tapered out to a shimmering pale brow.
Starting to do blending.
Mm-hmm, get it. And yeah, I agree with the pink. I always think of pink poodle skirts when I think of the 50s.
Yes.
Right? Like that pale pink. Uh-huh. Yeah. I like it, though. I like it.
Yeah. Here comes the hippies of the 60s.
Ooh.
The 1960s makeup looks were on both ends of the scale. From the au naturel look of the hippie brigade to the dramatic black and white eyes of the mod high fashion with elegance nestled in between. The 1960s was a youth-oriented decade. The baby boomers were coming of age and defined the decade as their own.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's kind of starting the era of almost modern makeup.
They're getting very experimental, which is like, it fits right in. Literally the 60s are like the, I always think of it, that's like when a lot of things shifted, a lot of experimentation,
and,
you know, all forms of the spectrum. So it makes so much sense that this is like a really big turning point with makeup, of course.
Oh, yeah. Powdered eyeshadows were matte. They also had cream, crayon, and liquid formulas, which had slightly pearlescent sheens or iridescent shimmer.
Ooh, pretty.
Yeah, they started introducing more types and more ways of making eyeshadow.
Mm-hmm.
Makeup brands advertised matching eyeshadow colors to your eyes again. For example, green or blue-green eyeshadows were for green or hazel eyes. Blue eyeshadow was for blue or gray eyes. And gray, beige, or browns were for gray or brown eyes.
I mean, I first of all disagree with this offhand, but like, I don't mind the whole like, oh, this might look good. It complements it, right?
Yeah.
But like, in theory, like your eye needs to pop, and blues pop with browns or like those metallic type colors, like dark neutral colors. Mm-hmm. Versus like brown eyes pop with like blues or, you know, greens. And greens, I think they're also kind of more earthy toned.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you wear what you like. That's what's great about makeup. But I just always thought that was so funny.
Because you need to think about color theory and what would look good and things like that. And it was more of reading like what the makeup suggestions were, kind of trying to tame it down on what colors to use for your eye color. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was very matchy matchy.
Uh-huh.
Like you match your makeup to your eye color, to your shoes, to, you know, so
Which, you know, I will say I've put on green eyeshadow and my eyes, you know, they are greenish. Mm-hmm. So I hate saying my eyes are actually green because some people will look at it and be like, those aren't green. Like, but they're not hazel either. I don't really have that much brown in my eyes. But anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're green.
Yeah. So.
And I wear browns too. And my eyes are naturally brown colored. But, you know, I also wear a lot of contacts that are colored. So it doesn't matter. My eyes will be different every day, I feel like. So
you do you, boo-boo.
Mm-hmm.
The mod eye makeup look had a distinctive black eyeshadow line in the socket crease and a pale eyelid color. The fashionable eye color was white with pastel blues and greens, which were also popular. Yeah, this is definitely a look that I cannot pull off, but I do like.
I know, it does look cool.
Using a darker color in the lid crease hadn't been done before the 1960s, at least in the US. Likewise, using a lighter shade under the brow was a relatively new trend. Other colors were also being used in the inner and outer corners of the eyes to create different eye makeup looks. The fashion continues to this day, albeit with a lot more blending.
Yes, blending is a thing.
I will say there are some times that when you put on eyeshadow, you look at it, you go, I just don't want to blend it. I like the way it looks right now.
Sometimes it's totally fine too. You do you. So by the 1970s, women's makeup was getting even more diverse. Retro smoky eyes and skinny brows revolved around the glitter ball of the decadent disco era and pogoed into the avant-garde punk era. I'm loving this.
Hell yeah.
From the barely there natural looks to super glam sheen, the makeup trends in the 1970s were as opposite as you could get. You got blues and greens, earthy tones and purples that were super popular. And then you have white and silver eyeshadow added to highlight under the eyebrows. I am loving this highlight. I love highlight. I don't do it often, but I do like it. Eyeshadows could be matte, but a pearlescent or iridescent sheen was highly fashionable. Some of the 1960s trends continued into the 70s. There were no hard edges except for the punk looks. It was just all soft and shimmery. I like that.
Yeah. What I really like about 70s makeup is, again, it's expanding even more from the 60s. Like, even more colors were becoming popularized and a wider range of techniques were starting to be used. It was like we were opening up the world even more to experiencing, like you said, we pull from different cultures like crazy and things like that. So, yeah, 70s really, really started turning it around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really awesome. And I just love glitter.
It's so awesome. So the 1980s was a fantastic decade.
Oh yeah.
Biases away now. Okay. The eye area was the focus of makeup in the 80s. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
And all efforts were focused on drawing attention to the beauty of the eye. Mascara was applied on both upper and lower lashes to open the eye. And they added more false lashes to give it a more feminine touch.
Just like God intended. No, I'm just kidding. I'm talking about the mascara was applied top and bottom. Finally.
The eye area was often emphasized with bright blue eyeshadow as well as dark shadow to add depth and mystery. Mystery. I don't know what mystery. Yeah. You know what I mean. Shut up.
I know what you mean. I got you.
Black eyeliner was frequently used, while other colors such as blue were also a popular choice for eyeliner and mascara.
We were talking about that, how we like the colored mascara and eyeliner, and I'm like, I don't own that much of that, and I feel like I don't see it that much, and when I see it, I'm like, oh my God, I forget I love that. Uh-huh. I want that.
Eyeshadows were commonly applied lash to brow in pink, blue, and purple, and used either a single color or blended them together. For a muted look, many opted for bronzes or tan shades, which, yeah, I remember my aunt or one of my aunts in her bathroom. She had, you know, Maybelline had those trays with the rectangles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could tell the color she always used because she would have ones where one color was always gone and we could play with the ones that had that color. But if we touched one that didn't have that color anymore, oh, you're in trouble.
That's awesome.
She was stuck in the 80s, which I love her.
I like that. That's awesome. So moving on to the 1990s, we're getting back into the blue eyeshadow. We're doing matte skin. We're doing brown lipstick and grunge black eyeliner.
Yes.
I love it. In a time before contouring became routine, we had a decade so influential that its makeup trends went down in beauty history. Covered in glitter, obviously. So from subtly twinkly to majorly metallic, any eyeshadow that was glittery in the late 90s was the thing. Yes. The brighter the colors, the better. So frosted blue was one of the most popular eyeshadow colors in the 1990s, color usually extended all the way to the brows. It was just never ending. The limit did not exist.
And neither did our eyebrows.
Ah, touche. Seriously. What eyebrows? Variations for this look included other bright pastels like pink, violets, and greens, often accompanied by glitter. Woo. A smoky eye with thick smudge eyeliner was the grunge alternative, or brown tones with matching eyeliner for a more natural look.
I love grunge makeup. Just, and I love the deep red colors for lipstick at that time.
This is so good. And at this time, I feel like Aurora is the one that's coming up. The one I identify with the most, that I remember the most, because that's when I actually started using makeup. But now as a grown up, I'm like, I love the 90s looks.
Same. So the 2000s were an interesting time, because that is when we started losing our eyebrows. For serious.
Mistakes were made the last decade.
The 2000s makeup trends were very distinct. And I mean very distinct. Think heavy pink blush with, you know, like razor thin eyebrows, body glitter up the wazoo, and high lip liner contrast. Like literally, you would have a very deep brown lip liner with almost a white color on the inside.
Yeah.
I never did that because I was like, that's good for you. It's not for me.
Yeah. I mean, mistakes are made, you know, so.
Though I will say there are some people that can pull off stuff like that and make it look really good. You're like, how do you do that?
Now, I never did the high contrast, but I did like the lip lining. I thought that was super cool, but it was always with a matching lip color.
Apart from the thriving internet economy, the makeup industry was evolving at a great pace. Celebrity icons such as Britney Spears, Beyoncé, and Paris Hilton established numerous groundbreaking trends. So, yeah, those people set trends, but I also looked at those trends and was like, again, that's not for me, but I like it on you.
Yeah, I remember seeing them like, oh, I like that. But like a lot of the time I didn't have like that makeup. And like at this time, the main thing I was doing was just plucking my eyebrows super thin and just lip gloss. That really was about it at this time. So,
yeah, the only time I really wore makeup a lot was on the stage for performances and stuff. The fashion and beauty industry also adapted various trends from the 90s. However, the decade also played its role in introducing various makeup and beauty trends, such as heavy lip gloss. Other popular 2000 makeup trends included frosted eye makeup, purple eyeshadow, and frosted lips. I wanted that frosted lip look to look good on me, but I could never make it look good. But for some reason, I really left it on. Like they said, Beyoncé, Britney Spears, Paris Hilton, like I thought it looked really good on them. But it just did not work for me.
Yeah, and that's all good. I remember I had this really cool lip smackers lip gloss, and it was like that frosty iridescent. That was like my go-to. That was so awesome.
Lip smackers was a shit.
Yeah, it is.
There was a chapstick I used in the 90s. It was called Can't Elope, and I didn't understand that, but it was a very good shimmer for me. Ooh. So it was like... Anyway, for eyeshadow, bright lilac, blue, and pink eyeshadows reigned supreme. While we mainly saw the color swipe across the lids, few people made a statement by adding the color to their lower lash line.
I love that. I still do it sometimes.
Oh, I do it a shit ton.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I do, because I think it really does bring everything together.
Yeah, I like that little pop of color. And moving on to the 2010s, a time of many transformations, especially in the realm of technology with the boom of social media. Contouring, heavy brows, big lips, and no makeup, makeup were like the thing. How could you ever forget the raccoon eye trend? The heavy smoky eye that was featured everywhere, like red carpets and the magazines. Like I was saying earlier, still wearing last night's makeup look.
Was
so cool. And through those years, it evolved into a subtle smoky eye, which was considered like more flattering for every day. The smoky eye was super big around this time too. I feel like it depends on like really what your scene was. If you were more into like that emo scene, super dark, gothic, obviously, that's a staple. And, you know, just depending on like the look that you wanted to go for.
Exactly. What I noticed about the 2010s is if you would look back on the very beginning, it is still very much 2000s. Like,
oh, yeah. They just kind of blend in.
Mm-hmm. And then eventually by like, I would say 2013, you started seeing really breaking away from the pale whatever. And yeah, it's crazy how the centuries mimic each other. Mm-hmm. You know,
everything just comes and goes again.
Now for the 2020s, you know, we've been living it now for 3 years. So
do tell me the future.
But 2020 makeup trends can be summed up in one word. Fun.
Yeah.
So basically, this is the I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want makeup.
Get it, hunty.
But the one change that's been really big is more of a feathery brow look than the harsh, like everybody called it Instagram brow. You know, the whoosh, whoosh brow. Mm. Basically, the one I still do and I don't care. I'm not changing it.
Same. The very like square uniform brow. Uh-huh. I love it. So it's okay. Hey, everyone's entitled to their own opinions.
There you go. It's not even wrong.
No, it's not.
But like we were saying, bold eyeshadows, bold blues, exaggerated shapes are coming back. And the 90s are coming back heavily.
Hell yeah.
And then also color eyeliner.
Mm-hmm. Which is done with eyeshadows a lot. Mm-hmm. I see that a lot. It's super cool.
Another thing that's gained in popularity like in the last year or so is taking watercolor activated eyeliner and using that, or just some sort of cake eyeliner and activating with an activator and then applying it that way and doing all sorts of crazy cool designs with it.
Awesome. I like that. Yeah, more and more makeup is for everyone. Men are quickly catching on to products such as concealer and eyeliner to enhance their own features as well. Doesn't matter like what you consider yourself, your gender or anything like that, you know, you can still use that if you want to, because it's all about enhancing one's own beauty. And you know, the desire for beauty has always been there. It's kind of a thing that people have in common. The main difference today is that there's safer ways to go about it. There's so much more knowledge around it as far as like different colors, stuff that stays on better, stuff that's safer, and you know, better for you, even like anti-aging stuff, you know. And more than ever, it's always been a tool of self-expression to be whoever you want and everything. So that's amazing. But I just feel like it's just more like I was telling you earlier, it's just like you're more free to do that now. It's just so cool. You have so many choices and so many possibilities. It's so amazing.
Love. Okay. So, I mean, we've kind of already talked about our favorite looks, but what are your favorite looks or applications for eye makeup?
Okay. So for eyeshadow specifically, I love shimmery colors and intense and highly pigmented. So like, I really like the 70s, 80s, 90s stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I really love the smoky look. Super big on it. And I mean, to me, eye looks, it's always mascara, eyeliner, eyeshadow. And the thing is, like, I love eyeshadow, but I will ultimately always go with a mascara if I am running out of time. I'll skip eyeshadow, and I'll sometimes skip eyeliner too. My go-to is always mascara, but just eyeshadow makes me feel like that extra specialness to it, you know? So I do love it. But what about you, Dee? What are some of your favorites in regards to eyeshadows?
Well, my go-to is always like a neutral look with browns and everything and then popping a shimmer on. But I really, really love doing colorful looks.
Mm-hmm.
Like my favorite one I ever did was for no reason at all. I went to go get COVID tested to make sure I could go back to work during the height of the pandemic. And it was my first test because I was exposed to it. So I had to wait 10 more days and then do another test. But it was a pink inner corner to a purple to a deep blue on the outside. And it was all blended together. And it was, oh, and I put on false lashes.
Good.
Oh, my God. I felt so pretty.
Sounds amazing. I wish you were taking pictures of that.
Yeah, you know I'm bad about taking pictures of myself, okay? Anyway, but I do love the smoky look, but I also like the really well-blended looks. Mm-hmm. I literally love both. Mm-hmm. And I love the grungy look, too. Oh,
yes. Yeah. I love it, too. Yeah, and I agree with you. I love the blending. And also, like you were saying, too, I like the neutral looks, too. Mm-hmm. To me, it really depends on my mood.
Yes.
And, like, I do like to coordinate with my outfit, too. I'm like, you know what? Today, I'm feeling really fucking bold. So, we're going to go with a bold outfit and a bold eye look. Today, I just wanted a more like preppy look, so I'm just, you know, go a little softer. Just depends.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about it, because you can do anything you want.
Very true. Can I just say I love makeup and that it is a fantastic form of art?
We can totally say that because it's true. I mean, the thing is, like, it is really cool, though, because I do feel like there's so many new things and, like, there's so many things you'll tell me about. I'm like, I didn't even know that. Yeah. That's fucking awesome. Also kind of develop from what I already do and know. Mm-hmm. I'll experiment with that in itself. And it's like, that's so cool. It's so cool.
It's changing all the time.
It is.
But it's also going back on old trends, but with their own flair now. I love it.
Everything comes around again.
It does.
Well, our next episode, it's going to be a little different. It's going to be about Futurama. It's so cool because, a little thing about this is that we've been meaning to do this episode since, like, last year, September, I think.
Yeah.
We had to keep pushing it for different reasons, but it's finally going to happen.
Yes.
Super excited. So, yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to have to watch some episodes because it's been a while since I've seen this. But I always love the show.
It's so good.
So good. Don't forget to follow us on our social media. We've been posting on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, of course. And all the links are in our show notes. Also, feel free to email us and let us know what's up. Ask any questions you may have. And just say hi.
Yeah, we would love to talk to you. All right, you know, all this talk, I'm about to go to the makeup store. You want to come?
Yes, let's get our makeup on, girl. Toodaloo, fellow rebels.
You know a lot of people with black eyes?
No.
Yeah.
So the demons.